Hey, thank you for choosing to spend some time with us here at Awake the Iron. These podcasts are also posted as videos on our website, so be sure to visit awaketheiron.com. While you're there, be sure to check out the Awake the Iron Academy. You'll never be bored again as you explore vast archives of videos, interviews, documents, lectures, humor, and more, covering an ever-increasing range of topics. Think of it like a self-guided, self-paced college, but without the mountains of debt. We would also love to hear from you, and you can do that two ways, either through the website contact form, or leave us a voice message by calling the Awake the Iron hotline. That's 601-654-IRON.
At Radio Free America, and this is Uncle Sam with music and the truth until dawn. Right now, I got a few words for some of our brothers and sisters in the occupied zone. The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall.
The demoralization process in the United States is basically completed already.
I don't want to lose heart!
We watched you guys land on the moon.
No,
which
you didn't.
Was...
No, you didn't. You watched animation.
It is Photoshop, but it's has to be.
No, screw your freedom.
Get vaccinated now.
I will never be on the wrong side again.
Welcome back to another segment of Awake the Iron. I'm your host, Cason Pratt, and back with us again in the studio, which is my basement. It's my basement. Is Karis, the Pilgrim of Persepolis. She's back, and with her is another special guest, Lena Wood. Lena Wood is with us today. I'm really excited about this. She is a regular presenter at ICOM, which is the International Conference on Missions, and a presenter at other places. She's a adventurer, and she's been to places like Asia 7 times, South Africa, Egypt. I didn't realize you'd been to Egypt, I guess. I forgot about that. And Ireland. She's climbed Mount Fuji. She's been to the base camp of Everest. It's kind of making my life seem a little bit dull. I went to Chick-fil-A. Yeah. That counts, right? And she's the author of Elijah Creek and the Armor of God books, which I have my whole set. Yeah. our whole set right here. And I wanted to read a little quick thing before we really get into it. One sec. I want to read a quick thing. This is in Lena's own words. She said, "My Elijah Creek series sprang from an urgent desire to protect kids." Man, that's very, very current. Mm-hmm. "And adults from the dark stuff." We'll talk about that maybe later. Somehow over the years, I became an unwitting expert in occult mysticism. That's maybe not something people set out to do.
Yeah.
She speaks on that topic, and mm-hmm. she'll work for gas money and food. Okay. Anyway, so yeah, that's a little blurb there, but I thought it really stung me there where you said protect kids mm-hmm. from the dark stuff. And I'm like, okay, well. Which, if anyone has not read Elijah Creek and the Armor of God, highly recommend. I would put it up next to Harry Potter or anything like that.
Oh, thank you.
So awesome. So awesome.
Good stuff.
And it's rich, you know, and it gives kids, speaking of kids, it I mean, maybe your target audience for that, for those books is, teens or something. I'm not sure, but I adults love it. I love it. And it's so good. So anyway, that's our special guest here with Karis is Lena Wood. So, and we're here today. If you see behind me, this is Lhasa, right? So I'm in the Tibet area, apparently. Obviously, just kidding. But I'll be honest, I was like, where is Tibet? You know, so I kind of had to look, and maybe in editing, I'll insert like a little map here, and we can see kind of relative to where it is. And I just used to think it's somewhere where the Dalai Lama lives, and a bunch of monks in orange robes. And they're all, just like nice. And it's somewhere that Brad Pitt was for 7 years, I guess.
Yeah.
That's it, literally. And I've never even seen that movie. 7 years ago. So I don't know what that's about or whatever, but
yeah.
So, on our show, it's about like deception and I don't know, are there red flags here? I mean, I don't know. It looks like a cool place, kind of fancy, it looks majestic. And so maybe there's more that meets the eye here, huh?
Yes. That's what we're going to talk about.
Okay. So
maybe just to preface, both Lena and I traveled together to Tibet back in 2009. So we have some personal, firsthand experience of some things we saw and felt and heard. Maybe I can share a picture real quick of a couple shots, very few pictures of us together.
Because we were all taking pictures of each other.
Yeah. Here's one right in front of what's behind you, the Potala Palace. Yeah, can you see that?
Yes.
Okay. And then see if that. And then here's one that triangle mountain in the back is Mount Everest.
The one on the left.
Oh, cool, man! So that's awesome.
Yeah, this was at a mountain pass where there was a great viewpoint. So yeah,
17,000 feet.
Yeah,
and we didn't pass out or throw up or anything.
Yeah. So for point of reference, Tibet is you can enter it through Nepal or through Mount Everest. Mm-hmm. You can approach it via Nepal or Tibet. It's kind of in between the two. Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyone who's just listening for audio, you got to get the website, like I said, and see the visuals. And I'm sure maybe people have seen pictures of Everest, but I personally don't know anyone other than you personally who's been there. So it's pretty cool to see your photographs. But
yeah.
Okay. So.
No oxygen up there, just FYI.
Yeah, I think what I was looking like, Lhasa is at 12,000 feet right about 12,000 feet.
Something like that, yeah.
Man, yeah, that's awesome.
I got altitude sickness the first couple of days. And then base camp is 17,000 feet. So, yeah.
That is very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
So why did you go there? Other than it looks like an awesome place to go, just to, if you're an adventurer, right?
Yeah. Well, Lena, do you want to go ahead and tell this part about your...
Okay, and then we can do your backstory.
Then we can kind of back up. Yeah.
Well, after I finished the Elijah Creek, the first 7 stories, kids were writing in and saying, are you going to have any more stories about Elijah Creek? And I thought, I'm not ready to just... put him to rest. So I was just trying to think of a plot. And I thought, okay, what about if some years pass and he disappears in the most spiritually darkest place on the planet and his friends have to drop their lives and go search for him? That might be kind of interesting. But I didn't know where that place was. I was imagining like the home of voodoo, West Africa, Benin or Togo. But as I began to read world religion books and mission books, things kept pointing to Tibet. And just like you, Kaysen, I knew 2 things about Tibet. Didn't know exactly where it was, but it was the Himalayas. And it was that sweet old chuckling monk, the Dalai Lama. That was it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know at the time that he hasn't lived there for decades. He lives in Dharamsala over in India. But
I was thinking Malibu, California, but
right.
Okay.
That too. Yeah. On a jet somewhere. Right. But so I began to dig in, like, what, why is this called like a graveyard for mission work and extremely hostile? And years and thousands of hours of research later, I realized that if I was going to write about him getting lost in a fictional place similar to that, I just couldn't believe what I was reading. And I thought, I'm going to have to go there and confirm what I've been reading. So I was reading pro, con, all kinds of research into it. And at the same time, you had been interested in Tibet.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. Okay. Maybe my little backstory. And I think what we're going to be mostly talking about tonight is the religion of Tibetan Buddhism. So it kind of ties in for me this way that I grew up in Japan, and one of the main religions there is Buddhism. And I knew Japanese people to be very kind and hospitable, you know, and respectful. And so my impression of Buddhism, you know, was very kind of positive, like, hey, you know, people who follow that are pretty cool. And then there was a point later in my life when I heard a monk speaking. This time it was in Thailand, a Buddhist monk, kind of, you know, teaching us about what they believe. And I just remember thinking, you know, if I weren't already a Christian and I was looking for something, this sounds so great. You know, it's about compassion and like, what do you call, maybe like self-control. Some of their rules are like our 10 commandments, you know, so it's good morality, the eightfold path, you know, all the right ways of being and right ways of interacting with others. And it just sounds really cool. Like it sounds like peaceful. But then as I got, as I learned more about different people in the world who haven't heard about Jesus or heard the gospel, something that kept popping up as a very dark place, you know, was kind of also this area of Tibet. Anytime that would pop up, it seems like if someone mentioned it or I mentioned it, they'd say, oh yeah, that's a really dark place. So similar to Lena's story, I just sort of wondered what's different about that. Because you have Buddhism in different areas of Asia, and even some in India, and what makes that one especially dark, you know? So
it kind of came, you had gone to Nepal the year before trekking, and then I was thinking, I need to go to Tibet and check this out. And we were just talking about it one evening, like, maybe we should go together. Because she already speaks some Chinese and is a world traveler. And so we just decided to go for it.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Excellent. So when you went there, what did you find out?
Well, we found out first that we had no idea what we were getting into.
Okay. Well, so what do you mean by that? You know, like expand on that for us.
Well, Tibetan Buddhism, it's a completely different picture here and there. So here in the West, in America, you would be told, well, Kara's had conversations with Tibetan Buddhists here who said, it's not really like a religion. It's more like psychology. It's a way of being. But there, it was entirely different. It's actually, Tibetan Buddhism is actually a mix of an atheistic Buddhism and Bon, which is the indigenous religion, the original religion that we know of in Tibet, which is like mountain worship, demon appeasement, things like that, and Hindu tantrism, which is sex magic. So you take those three religions and kind of blend them together, isolate them in the Himalayas for hundreds of years, and what do you get?
Interesting.
So we're not talking about the Tibetan people. They too have been isolated in the Himalayas for hundreds of years, and this is all they know.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Right, and that's one thing. Yeah, we both wanted to be sure to communicate that the darkness we're talking about, it's not caused by the people. You know, they're just humans like us. They want to be happy and have fulfilled lives. Mm-hmm. But we believe that there's a deception within the religion itself, mm-hmm. and like a bondage to those trapped inside of it. And that is what I feel like we saw and mm-hmm. felt when we were there, you could feel it. You could see it in people's eyes that this darkness that we had heard about was evident.
Mm-hmm. And on the surface, mm-hmm. it felt a little bit in some places like the old West.
Yeah.
Because there are shepherds and they have yaks and they have small towns with just the basics, restaurants and hotels. So their lives are simple and hard mm-hmm. as well. But the religion itself is so oppressive. And that's what we were kind of digging into.
Yeah.
So oppressive, oppressive how maybe it's maybe something difficult for us if you're in the West.
Yeah.
To kind of grasp, like maybe like what are the conditions there? Like, is it China? Is it a part of China?
Yeah. Officially, like politically it is.
It's called the autonomous region, an autonomous region of China, which means it's kind of own thing, but it's mm-hmm. under the auspices of China. They were officially, well, it's been a back and forth mm-hmm. thing for centuries. Is Tibet its own thing or is it part of China? Mm-hmm. And then the Cultural Revolution mm-hmm. in the 1940s? Yeah. Where the Dalai Lama was, he had to escape mm-hmm. and China really took over. So
right. Up until then, the role of the Dalai Lama was considered the political head as well as the religious head of the nation.
He was mm-hmm. it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was, yeah. Political, dual, religious, dual purpose. Education, pretty much the only mm-hmm. educational institutions were the monasteries.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So is that that's a theocracy, I think? Maybe. Or, yeah.
I don't know if that's what they would call it.
Yeah. But
yeah.
But basically, yes. Yeah. He is considered the God King, mm-hmm. or yes, was.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to your question about the oppressiveness, I think we're going to talk later about like more ceremonies and rituals, especially of the more like the more elite within the religion. Well, and kind of a regular people too, but as far as for the average person, the idea that this is true of all forms of Buddhism, you owe mm-hmm. some kind of debt to, based on your behavior, your good deeds versus bad deeds. And if your bad mm-hmm. deeds outweigh, right, then you have to pay off a debt. And we all throw around the term karma, like, oh, you got some good karma, but mm-hmm. Karma refers to the consequences. Thank you.
Yeah.
The consequences of your behaviors and the balance of your good and bad behaviors, right? So people who struggle or experience a lot of bad things, how they mm-hmm. understand it is that they have a huge debt they have to repay of good deeds
from previous lives.
Right. And that, so the average person, especially if they have struggles or suffering, they walk around thinking, oh, I have to do lots and lots of what's considered good deeds, whatever that religion decides are the good deeds, to sort of pay that debt down and to try to climb back up to at least zero.
Right? So yeah, unlike the gospel, which is about grace and forgiveness, karma, essentially, even though we use that term a lot, karma means you're never, ever forgiven for anything ever, mm-hmm. not only in this life, but however many past lives that they believe that they've had. And you never know if you've paid it off. Mm-hmm. So we saw so many older people. I mean, I would guess most of the older people spinning the prayer wheels, just walking around spinning, because each spin is like so many thousand prayers. Mm-hmm. So they're cranking up deeds by doing this. Mm-hmm. But it was just over and over.
And they do prostrations. So it's you take one step and then you lay flat on the ground, stretching your arms and feet, legs all the way out flat. And then you stand back up straight and then you take one step and then you do that same thing again. Well, sometimes they do them in place. I have a little video clip of people doing that in place at a holy place, but you can also do it as a journey, like going around the Potala Palace, like in your background, for example. You do a one cycle around it, doing prostrations all the way.
So those are the prostrations or the spinning the wheel, or maybe they have other things.
Maybe both. Yeah.
Those are good things that are negating mm-hmm. bad things that you did or you were responsible for from a previous life that you don't even remember, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So who's keeping tabs on?
I know that's it.
Who's keeping score? Like, am I good now? Or
that's a million dollar question. Yeah. Where do I see my score? Like, that's why it's so oppressive. You don't. And so you
don't know. Some people go on longer pilgrimages, even to like the most holy mountain, Mount Kailash. They will do prostrations all the way there, which is miles and miles and miles. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they die on the way.
We saw a man on the road and our tour guide said, oh yeah, he's doing that pilgrimage. It probably taking him months, you know, a months long trip to.
So think of the old West when cowboys and farmers were just eking out a living. Every day was difficult anyway, just to grow the crops and feed the cows. So imagine on top of that, months of prostrations or hours and hours of spinning the prayer wheels. It's heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
So while they're doing that, I mean, they're not like working or making a living. So is everybody, I'm trying to get everybody's energy is going into that. Like most of your energy is going into that. And then if you have time to maybe eat something, then you can. So like people are really poor maybe, or, I mean, I'm guessing.
Well, and it might depend on the level of devotion or belief in that system, but you know, it's possible there are people who don't think too much of it. And given that like China's presence there, you know, they probably don't hugely promote the religion.
And
so some people might be more just atheist or secular, but those who believe this religion, that would be, they would think that. And
we were approached by children. Parents would get their children to ask for money, so there's, you know, just a kind of desperation
that
we don't get over here.
That's why I'm interested in finding out this from you, because you were there. So So where do we go from here? This is interesting.
Yeah. Well, we have some pictures that we took. Karis took hundreds of pictures and I took a few.
And some of these might be stock photos too, but.
Okay, so there's the.
If you do share them, just keep in mind, we have some maybe audio only people. So you can kind of describe.
Yes. So we'll start. We have that one first.
Okay.
Hey, I feel the need to insert a little bit of a disclaimer, a warning here, that some of the things we're discussing here are interesting, but are not meant to be enticing. So use caution. Also, if you choose to research more on your own, which we always encourage people to do so with extreme caution. In a spiritual sense, I think this is a little bit dangerous. We're going to be sharing some images that could be a little bit disturbing and a little bit gruesome and a little bit weird. So just use your own judgment, and just wanted to let you know that that was coming up.
So here's an image.
Ugh.
So this is a mandala. A mandala is a diagram that represents a spiritual reality.
Mm-hmm.
So this one, it's kind of hard. It's a very bestial black monster with bulging red eyes and fangs, and he's wearing a skull crown, and he's got his hands and feet kind of wrapped around a diagram that's supposed to be the world.
Yeah,
right?
My understanding is the circle of whatever the mandala is kind of is a representation of the world. Mm-hmm. And he's got his hands and like he's clutching it, and his mm-hmm. fangs are in it. And then there's smaller pictures in there that I don't think we can see on this particular photo, but
sometimes when the Dalai Lama is doing a presentation, that drawing, that poster will be up behind
mm-hmm.
him.
Mm-hmm. So this, I just think this gives insight into, this is how they're telling us like the world is.
Mm-hmm.
And so this kind of art, and we have a few more that you might see, you'll find this type of art in the temples, in, you know, maybe, I don't know if there were some like that in the restaurant even, or hotel.
Well, there were posters you could buy.
Uh-huh. But you would see this kind of art the places that you go in Tibet.
It's reminiscent to, for me, of growing up in Japan. It feels familiar.
Yeah,
to me.
They have like those guard dogs at the gates of the temple.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Look like this. Yeah. Here's another one. I don't know if I can get that much bigger.
Now this is the door to the Nechung Monastery. Nechung is the oracle. He prophesies and advises the Dalai Lama, and this is a door into that monastery. And for those who can't see it, it's a painting, a drawing of a man who has been ripped open and disemboweled, and he's green and he's kind of hanging there.
So obviously, you know, it's not just artwork, right? Is this is symbolic of something, and like,
right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is this place, the Nechung monastery is nicknamed the Demon Fortress.
I see.
We wanted to go there, but just as we were getting ready, our tour guide was heading in that direction, and then they saw some guards and the driver and she looked at each other like, nah, and so they drove on past. So I don't know what was going on there that we couldn't go, but mm-hmm. maybe that was the Lord protecting us, because it's extremely dark. So this is a ritual vessel. For those who don't have the visual, it is a skull, a human skull. It has been turned upside down in order to make it a vessel, and it's nested in what looks like a gold platform. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, are those skulls around the bottom?
They look kind of like ogre-y, demon-y faces.
Yeah. So there's metal covering his eyes and nose, and then the bottom part of his jaw is also metal. But it is a ritual drinking vessel for...
Right out of Temple Indiana Jones Temple of Doom.
Yeah. Exactly. You go back and look at that movie after you've seen this, and like, that's mm-hmm. where they got those ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yikes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that may have been that picture when I was doing my investigation. That was probably the first picture that I went, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. One more.
So that's not a prop. That's a real skull.
No. And if you look into, since this is magic and it's black magic, there are certain elements that are more powerful than others. So, a skull or a thigh bone of a murdered virgin or a child who's the product of incest has more black magic power than another type of person. Mm-hmm.
This is what they think, right?
This is what they say.
Right. This isn't just you saying things.
Right.
This is what they think.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Whew.
Wow.
So when we went on our tour, it's a prepackaged tour. You have to go just to the places that you're allowed to go, which are mostly temples and monasteries and holy places. We went to Holy Lake and, of course, Mount Everest is the like Holy Mother Mountain, and temples and such. And we stopped at one place and our guide was very excited. She said, she came running back and she said, you get to see the mask dance. Like, okay. So mm-hmm. we were at a monastery temple and it was a big crowd already gathered. And then I really couldn't see, but Karis was tall enough and she had her camera over. So she was kind of play by playing what was going on there.
And I have a little clip of that, a little video clip from our experience of the mass dance.
Okay.
I can share.
So yeah, the monks are dressing up in these elaborate costumes that kind of fanged beasts and birds, and they're marching around. You want to show that?
Yeah.
So what's laying there in the center, that the head monk, before the mask dance began, put what looked like a cloth dummy, about a child size cloth dummy. And I was just listening to Karis and she was describing it. And she said, that looks like guts. So they were putting what looked like human intestines laying on top of that dummy. And the dummy is laying on a mat that has the same kind of ripped apart, disemboweled human being that we saw on the Netchung door. Mm-hmm. And then as the dance begins, the center monk picks up some of those, what looks like human intestines, probably fake, because they make them out of dough and red dye, and just begin hurling them at the monks who were circling around. And one of them caught a hunk of it on one of his fangs, and he was swinging it back and forth, and the crowd was laughing and clapping.
Yeah. Very disturbing to us, but everybody was just smiling and like, oh, fun festival.
And she was, our guide was so happy that she could show us this, and we're like, well, thank you very much. Even though this was not, we believe, anything to do with actual human sacrifice, the symbolism is not lost on anybody who's paying attention. Mm-hmm. It is the symbolic disemboweling of a human being and feeding their entrails to demons.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much what I got out of it.
Okay, very, very interesting.
Yeah.
So... yeah, I guess, you know, people, like you said, someone who's paying attention, if someone just sees that, you know, like there's cultural things that a lot of different cultures have their own, you know, like in Japan, they have all kinds of festivals and dances and stuff. And I guess if you're paying attention to what the religion is all about, right? Mm-hmm. That's where it gets weird. Yeah. Right?
Because the bottom line of that is this form of Buddhism is a mix of atheistic or non-theistic Buddhism, demon worship from the ancient religion in Tibet, and Hindu sex magic. Mm-hmm. So that's what it is. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. So I would say we have here in like America, we have a completely distorted perception of like the Dalai Lama. Mm-hmm. Now, is Dalai Lama, is that his title? Is that a title?
Yes, it means oceans of wisdom is basically what it means.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
His real name Tenzin Gyatso. Am I saying that right?
I don't know.
So he's the 14th Dalai Lama, which means he's the 14th incarnation of the God of Mercy. So he's the embodiment of one continuous being.
Okay, you know? Who takes on different or it becomes or not becomes, but goes into different humans along the way. Is that?
Yeah.
So when the 13th Dalai Lama passed away, when was that? 1933. Then they go on a search for the next one. And it was a few years, and they do magic rituals to try to find this person. And then they found this young child, Tenzin Gyatso. And then when they identify him through their testing and rituals, then they take him back to the Potala Palace, and he begins his life of training.
Mm-hmm.
So how do they select? How do they select this person? Like Willy Wonka had a golden tickets, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think there are various ways, but one thing is that they set out the toys of the previous.
I was going to say, I think there's a series or options of various tests that they do mm-hmm. to determine that.
Mm-hmm.
I have heard that about the toys, like, and if he recognizes, you know, something he shouldn't, it's a sign that he's the same person that was the previous, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
But I think there might be different ones that they can do.
But, okay. Yes. And I was just thinking, mm-hmm. If there are dark entities, mm-hmm. which I think there are, mm-hmm. then and if you tap into that, then they mm-hmm. could definitely say, "Yeah, go get that kid," or mm-hmm. or whatever. I guess that's not outside the realm of possibilities.
Yeah.
Wow. Very, very interesting.
Yeah. Well, and then what you said about, you know, who. Like our misconception or our lack of full understanding about these things, you know, partly has to do with the marketing or the presentation of the Dalai Lama himself.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting that we know that anybody can look up and find out, oh, he's the 14th incarnation of this being that's considered a bodhisattva. So basically a Buddha who has chosen to stay behind rather than go on to nirvana so that he can help others, you know, find the way, so to speak. So, but then you might hear the Dalai Lama talk about himself in ways that are very like, oh, I'm just a humble monk, you know.
Mm-hmm. And he's also a Nobel Peace Prize.
I was just going to bring that up. Yeah.
And is it very interesting because, yes, he was exiled from Tibet by the Chinese government, or he felt like he had to go. He felt like he was in danger. And then I'm not even sure how he became a candidate for the Nobel Prize because, of course, he was speaking about the plight of the Tibetan people. But how many years has passed and how things changed.
Mm-hmm.
So is the plight of the Tibetan people was that brought on by the Chinese, or is that the perception and really they're like slaves to this kind of like a cult almost?
Yes. And yes.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
My heart just goes out. They're kind of caught between an atheistic communistic government
mm-hmm.
and black magic demon worship
mm-hmm.
and isolated and left up into, you know, a few decades ago, mostly uneducated because it was something like 20% or more of the men were conscripted to train at the monasteries. Mm-hmm. And that was their education was this
religious education.
Religious.
Yeah.
I mean, not that they didn't get, you know,
reading.
Yeah.
Reading right.
And mm-hmm. a regular education.
Mm-hmm.
But, and it's very ironic that after the Chinese government kind of moved in, that's when, well, before that time, were there any roads, schools, hospitals, orphanages?
We were definitely on a road that they said was new within the last 2 years mm-hmm. of when we were there. And so definitely there's more infrastructure. That's one of the pluses, perhaps.
It's not good anyway, you slice it. But yeah. When we came back from Lhasa, we took the highest train in the world, and it was wonderful. 2 days on beautiful scenery, and I guess that's it wasn't
it's Tibetan. Relatively new.
Chinese development.
I would assume.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's anyway, slice it's bad. Yeah.
But we do have. We were talking about the Dalai Lama, what he says about himself.
All right, well, that's all the time we had for part one of this segment. Be sure to tune in next time for part two. And be sure to check out awaketheiron.com for the full video experience. We'd also love to hear from you. You can give us a call at the Awake the Iron hotline. It is 601-654-IRON. Thanks again, and as always, be sure to choose love, because hate is just too great a burden to bear. We'll see ya.